Starting from the mission at the top of Lamed Aleph. Mishnah says a shofich ma'im b'rishut rabim v'huzak behen acher chayev nizko. Someone pours out water into the rishut rabim. Someone else gets damaged by that water. Then you're chayev for the nezek that that water caused. Hamasniyat the coat. This is chid. Someone who puts glass or thorn. Aguder gidro b'kotziv. Someone makes a fence out of thorns. V'gider shenafal. Gader shenafal rishut rabim, or a wall that fell into rishut rabim, whose kupa and achirim, and others were damaged by that any of these items. Then chayav v'niskan, he's responsible for the damage that they did.
A good thing you're considering like a barbed wire fence would
be right problematic, right? Exactly. So Amar Rav lo shano el detanfu kelav b'mayim. The damage done over here by the water, the shofech chamayim b'rishut rabim, is the fact that his kilim became soiled by the water. Of al huat small, the person himself who trips up is patur. Why? Because karka olam has a kato. The person who gets damaged, if he trips or he slips, is not by the water itself, but by the impact on the ground. And Rav doesn't believe that you're responsible for that impact that happened on the ground. We had this, just Rav did the same thing with the previous Mishnah. And the Amalei Rav Huna, the Rav. So Rav Huna says, Rav, lo yehei ela k'rif sho. Why should you not be responsible over here for the person who falls over, slips on the water, and gets damaged? Refesh is, his garbage or his junk that he throws out into the Shuta Rabim. If he does that, then you are responsible for the damage that's done. Now, first of all, Rav Sho, over here, the assumption is that the water went out, it mixed with the afar, with the dirt out there, and then it makes like a mud, or some sort of gunk that is out in the Shuta Rabim, and that would be the equivalent to your Zebel. So if it's the equivalent to your Zebel, then we know you're responsible for your Zebel. As Rashi points out here, the important thing is that we are, according to Rabbi, being Mechayev in Kelim. When we're Mechayev in Kelim, that means that we are not talking about the Mazik of Bor. Because the Mazik of Bor is actually Patur in Kelim. So the instance, the case over here must be an instance where he was not Maskir, that which he put out into the Rishut Rabim. Both by the Zevel that he throws out, and also by this refish that we're suggesting here, the water that he puts down to Rishut Rabim, that he's not mafkir that water, because if he was mafkir the water, there would be nothing to discuss, because if he'd be netanku kelim, he would be patur, because kelim are patur when it comes to a bor b'shut rabim. Whereas, if you own it, then it becomes a dinin shur. Dinin shur, you could be chayav, number one, for kelim, and number two is, if that's the case, Vuna wants to know, for Ram Rav, why is it no worse than throwing your zevel out there? If the guy falls in the zevel, right, then you are responsible for that which transpired or that which happened to this individual. So when it says, Misavar de lo tamu mayo, you think that the case here is that the water did not somehow dissolve into the ground or end, meaning end, the water didn't end. The tamu mayo is a case where the water basically did not have, there was not a sufficient water in order to make it into mud or to make it into a, into a, some sort of concoction that would be the equivalent of your zevel. So Gemara says, and then Tarta Lamali, our last Mishnah just said the exact same thing. You've done, if that is the case, that the water is not mixing with the dirt that is outside, then the previous Mishnah on Chavchet said, Nishper Kado Brishut Rabim, V'chukhach Echad B'mayim. His kad breaks in Rishut Rabim, and someone slips in the water. Now I have a Mishnah here saying the exact same thing. He pours his water into Rishut Rabim, and somebody slips on the water. Why do I need two Mishnah is telling me about slipping on water? And in both of those instances, Rav's telling us, oh, you're only responsible for the kelim, right, and not the individual gets hurt. So Rav says, no, we do need to. Why? Chada b'motachama, v'chava b'motachshamim. One is for the summertime, and one is for the wintertime. Why is that? Tanya, we have a braisa called Elusha Amru Potkim b'voteyam, v'gorfim arutehem. That any time when we say that people have permission to clear out their sewage pipes and to do spring cleaning in their cave, and push this water or put all the dirt into Rishut Rabim, Bimota Chama, that in the time of the summertime, in Lahem Rishut, they have no permission to do this. Since it's the dry season, if one was to clean out their areas with water all over the Rishut Rabim, right, that would be mess up the Rishut Rabim. On the other hand, it would be Bimota Kshamim, during the winter season, when it's wet, then they're not adding anything to Rishut Rabim. They're not doing something that is deteriorating the Rishut Rabim. So Yesh Lahem Rishut, then they have permission. The Afalpi should be reshut, even though they have permission to do this. Right? If someone got damaged, or they did damage to deserve the damage, you are responsible for it. So that's what the two Mishnayot come to teach us. One in the summertime, one in the wintertime. That even though a person, in one instance, for instance, this summer, cannot push the water and their dirt out of the Rishut Rabim, there for sure you are held accountable or culpable for the damage that is done. On the other hand, even in the wintertime, where there is water, and you're permitted to throw your water out and to put your stuff into the Rishut Rabim, nevertheless, if someone gets damaged by that, you are still responsible for it. And that's what the second Mishnah comes to teach us. If one slipped on the water in that instance, and it was your water that caused that problem, then you are responsible for it, even though you have permission to put it out in the Rishut Rabim.
And generally, when somebody has permission, to do something, they're not sorry for it. In other words, like in some cases, like somebody leaves something unusual, which is around, but they don't have license to do so. Or in a chaser, like with this thing, if someone has permission to have their shore there,
this is an unusual thing where everybody does it, and they have permission to do it because it's not so incremental to damage to the Rishut Rabim, but nevertheless, you have the
capability.
Right, exactly. I'm asking at the coast, so we saw this already. This was the case that we brought at the end of yesterday's daf to prove what the position of Rabbi Yochanan was. But the idea that if you put the coast there, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu ela b'mafriya, that when the kotzim push out or into the Rishut Rabim, avom in tamtaim, if the kotzim, the gather kotzim is inside of your own property, then lo. So where it says, my time of patur. Why in the instance where you move the kotzim into your own property, why are you patur? So we saw it yesterday again. It's not normal behavior of people to rub up against the walls. Meaning that if you stick your materials out into the Rishut Rabim, then people are going to end up bumping into it, and we're going to make you responsible for that which is sticking out to the Rishut Rabim. But already, if you pull it inside of your own property, even though it faces, or it's on the edge of the Rishut Rabim, our assumption is that normal course of walking and normal course of behavior is that people do not rub themselves up against your wall. They don't bump up into your wall. And therefore, by putting out the kotzim, we're not going to hold you accountable. The Gemara yesterday tried to give two possibilities. That explained that about what the issue was when you pulled it in. But nevertheless, the core to distinguishing between pushing it out and bringing it in is whether people's normal behavior is to rub up against walls. And here we say no. That their behavior is not to rub up against walls, and therefore it's in your property, you'll be patur. You'll be chayav. Now, Tanarabina. Tanarabana. Amatnia kototav, zuchuchiotav, letocha koto. Some guy comes along and stores a coat, a thorn, or a glass inside of a wall. Shokhaveiro. But it's not his wall, it's someone else's wall. The wall borders on Rishut Rabim, and he sticks this stuff in there to store it. Uba palakotel v'satar koto. The person comes along and takes down his wall. V'nafal v'rishut rabim. And this coat and this chuchit that were embedded in the wall, that were hidden in the wall, fall into rishut rabim. V'ziko chayav ha-matzniya. The person who stored them there is chayav. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan modifies this and says, lo shano el bakotel ra'ua. That's only if the wall was a weak wall. Why? Because if it was a weak wall, the person who stored the materials there had to assume, or had to at least have thought, that there was a possibility this wall would not be here anymore. Because it's weak, then the owner of the wall would probably take it down, or it might fall down. And because of that possibility of it either being taken down or falling down, he should have considered when he stored the zuchit and the coats there that they could become exposed. Aval b'koto bari, we're talking about a solid wall, then amatznia patur v'chayav balakoto. The one who stored in there is patur, and the balakotel is chayav, which is very interesting. And Rashi, it says the balakotel is chayav because the person who put it there should never have considered that he would have taken the wall down, number one. And number two is that when he did take the wall down, he should have cleaned up everything. He should have been matzniya, anything that fell out of that wall, he was responsible for cleaning up. So, Amar Ravina, Ravina says from this, Zoto Merit, from this we can conclude, that a person who has a board that they dug up, and now they want to cover it. So they take their friend, including their friend's bucket, and plug the hole that they made in Rishut Rabim with their friend's bucket, some material of their friend they take, and they just stick it on top of their board to cover it. And then the owner of the bucket comes, and he takes his dalio back. I mean, he's entitled to it. It's his bucket. He comes and takes it back. Then what? Chayav balabor. The balabor in this instance will be responsible. Why? Why would he be responsible? Because he should have assumed when he took his friend's bucket that his friend's going to eventually come and take the bucket back. If that's the case, then he knows that there's a risk that the war will be exposed. It says, Pshita. What do you mean? It's exactly the same case. What do you need to tell me? This, I would have concluded this even if that's you, Ravina. Where it says, Ma'od the same, what have I got? Hatam hu do rabbi yodalei, de lo de e. In the case by the kotel, by the wall, he doesn't know who put the glass or the needle or the coat, the thorn in the wall because it was facing out to the Shutter Rabbin. So he has nobody to tell, right, about the fact that there was something in there. Avalhacha, the yodalei, right over here where the baladli knows the balabor, right? Avalei lo de, he should have told the balabor that he's pulling his dli out. Kamash Milan, that's not his responsibility. Now his responsibility is to tell him that he's taking the bucket back, and therefore it's the responsibility of the balabor to assume that his bor will be open, and he will be, again, the balakli will be patur, and the same thing by the kotel. The kotel, the matnia will be patur, because he didn't have to make that assumption. When it was a kotel bari, when it was a strong wall, he assumed that his stuff was protected and out of the reach of the Rishut Rabim. And therefore, the one who's going to be responsible is the Bala Kotel. Whereas if it's a Kotel Ra'ua will be exactly like the case with the board with the Dli. Because if it's a weak wall, the person who stuck it there should have known better than to leave his stuff there because it was going to get exposed in the near future. So now, Dan Rabbanan, Chassidim Arishonim, Hayu Matzni'im Kotzotehem, Zechuchiyotehem, B'toch Sadotehem. If you want to be a real Chassid, the Chassidim Arishonim, they used to, how do they take care of stuff, things that were dangerous for the rabbim, they used to store them in their fields. And when they store them in their fields, they used to dig pits in their, you know, pits. They used to dig into the ground of their fields, gimel tefachim, three tefachim into the ground, and then bury this stuff below the three tefachim. That the plow, when it went by, would not catch on this stuff and then re-expose it. So they used to bury it three tefachim deep. Number one, so nobody should get hurt by it, and number two, the depth has to do with the fact that most fields were plowed, and the plow, it seems here, does not go more than 3 tefachim deep. And because of that, they buried it below 3 tefachim in order to prevent any damage happening to the rabim. Rav Sheshi is, Shadi Lahu Benura. Rav Sheshi, when he had to handle items that caused damage, he used to throw them into the fire. Right, so they would be totally consumed, and they would no longer cause damage. Rava, Shadi Lahu Bediglas. Which is interesting, he stuck it into the Chidekel, into the river. Right, which is an interesting solution, right, for them. The rivers in those days, and this was true until later in the into the Middle Ages, where they used to use the rivers both as their garbage dumps, as their sewage, and as their drinking water, and as their bathing spots. So they used to dump all their garbage into the river until they realized that if they kept doing that, then the people downriver were drinking the garbage from the people upriver, and it was causing disease and problems. But right here, he threw it into the river because that was considered, again, to be a place that was out of the reach of the Rabbim, would get washed down, and it would be not a problem. I'm Rav Yehuda. I'm on the Dubai, Mahave Chassida, and someone wants to be a Chassid, but Kayem Milei Din Zikim. He should ensure, right, or keep the Milei Din Zikim, which is what we just saw, right? They're quoting this obviously because of the bright, but that we just mentioned that Chassidim Rishonim, Ayum Asim, right? So over here, he reflects that one wants to be a Chassid, should take care of Inyan Nizikin. Again, Inyan Nizikin are issues of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. So a person who is Makpid on Inyan Nizikin is someone who takes or puts high worth right on other individuals, the property of other individuals, how they treat other individuals, and therefore they are considered to be Chassidim because right, they are considerate of others. And then Rav Amar, Rav says, and others say here that it's Rishonim, other Rishonim says Ravina. Binamar Milei De'Avot. Right, a person wants to be a Chassid, he should keep the Milei De'Avot, which reference to Masechet Avot, which again is the way a person should conduct themselves, right, and it gives guidance to the way of a proper conduct and the proper way of a person should conduct himself, especially with other people, the interaction with other people. So again, this idea of Chassidut, right, referencing the interaction with others. Ramilo, and some say that he said that Milei did Brachot. Right, that's an Indian of brachot, and again, brachot are also an Indian of, I think, which would be an Indian of hakarat atot, right? That a person who is makpid and brachot, right, gives proper hakaras hatov to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, who affords him the opportunity to, whether it's birkat hananim, to enjoy, or the brachot achronot, which he's giving thanks for which he had, right, or other brachot, which considered a Kadosh Baruch Hu as the borei olam, right? So again, an important aspect of hakaras hatov, and the person who is a makir tov to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right, hopefully that is ingrained in the person, they will also be makir tov to others. Again, this term of chassidut, right, really has to do with consideration and thought of others, whether it's milei de zikin, milei de avot, or milei de brachot. The
very dismissive. I mean, the point is, nezikin should apply to everybody, this is the kind of thing that runs a Caesar, that was his Caesar, something that which is God, which is a kosher concept.
Right. I don't think here that they are saying that Nizikin only has application to Chassidim, but those, I mean, you know, in daily life and in natural course of events, things do happen in Milei de Nizikin. Milei de Nizikin is a way to rectify mishaps between different people and between, you know, altercations. So the idea of Chassidim and Shishim is that they took Milei de Nizikin so, right, or they were so careful about Milei de Nizikin that they would not get even, they would try to prevent themselves from ever being involved in Milei de Nizikin. Like this idea here that they buried their kotzim and their zukuchit three tefachim down the ground, that they the forethought that they wanted to get it out of the public's way, and they put three tefachim deep so it wouldn't get caught in the plow. So that type of forethought and consideration of others, I think, is what they're referring to as chassidim rishonim, rather than the idea that only nizikim applies to chassidim rishonim. I think that's broader application to everyone as a, you know, nizikim, but here they had the forethought to prevent nizikim from happening, and to such an extent.
Marsha says that there are three spheres of conduct that relate to a person. One is a person to other people, a person to himself, and a person to Adon Lamakam. And the three opinions over here relate to each of those things. The Zikin is obviously a person with relating to other people. The Avot is character traits, a person developing his own character traits. And Brachot is a person's relationship with Adon
Lamakam. Very nice. So very nice. Very nice. All right, next Mishnah. Amotziya tivno v'kash'ol l'rishut rabim. Someone throws out his straw, right, and his kash, his leftover stalk to the rishut rabim l'zvalim, because he wants them to go out into the rishut rabim and be trampled, and to get wet and trampled, so they will turn into zevel. They will turn into good fertilizer. Uzak bayonakher. Someone else gets hurt by them. Chayav v'nizko. Again, then you get your chayav for any damages caused by that. V'chol akodem mehen zacha. But beyond that, anybody who takes possession of them can grab them out of Rishut Rabim, he's entitled to that. Because by the mere fact that you put them into Rishut Rabim, entitles anybody else, when you put dangerous items or things that people can get hurt by in the Rishut Rabim, that entitles other people to take them and to remove them from the Rishut Rabim. Right, so that's a good question. It may not be that he's mafkirim, this we're going to see in the Gemara. Right, is that the fact that he's now responsible, we're going to see right now in the Mishnah, which we're going to say it, but the fact that right, the fact that you have put a damaging item in the Rishut Rabim, in a sense, has stripped you of the ability to demand that others do not take it. And as a Rishut Rabim, kol ha-mekalkalim b'Rishut Rabim, anybody who messes up the Rishut Rabim, bezika, chayavin, l'shalim. So first of all, if they do damage, you have to pay for it. Kol kodem ben zacha. Anybody who takes that or removes it, they are taking possession of it. Again, because you're not entitled to do this, you're putting a damaged item in the Rishut Rabim. And therefore, we are going to, in a sense, you forfeited ownership by doing that. Not that you are not responsible, but you have forfeited ownership. This is, we quoted yesterday, someone is turning over dung, somebody gets hurt by them, you have to compensate for that damage. Let's say our mission is a lot like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we have a bright Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Bishat, Ulfat, Zvalim, Adam, Motziz, Valo, Rishut Rabim. That a person at the time when everybody else is taking their dung out into the Rishut Rabim to get trampled, everybody can do that. And he has to collect it in and bring it back into the house, or, you know, every 30 days. In order that it gets trampled by people's feet and by the feet of the behemoth, you put this dung out there, people will trample it, and you bring it in. You're permitted to do such a thing. So when it says, Shemat Kain, or the price of Shemat Kain, and Chil Yeshua, it's our social contract. When Yeshua gave the people the land, everybody agreed to allow for each other to do this, because without it, it would be, right, impossible to live. So this was a social contract that said that people were entitled to do such a thing, which would be normal course of living, and when, if everybody did it, then everybody would agree that we wouldn't hold you accountable. Right? Says no. I feel the same of Rabbi Yehuda. Who says Rabbi Yehuda says you're patur here? All he says is that you have permission. Moder Rabbi Yehuda, she may zik, mashalei mashi zik. This is what Shaul said before. Meaning that generally, when you have permission, that should also mean that you are patur from the nizikin. But here we see a model already where you, even though you are permitted to do it, right? Nevertheless, you are chayav for it. So Rabbi Yehuda is joining that model and saying, even though you're permitted, or you, we have an agreement that everybody puts it out to the shidur rabim, nevertheless, you are held accountable for the damage that it does. V'atna, don't we have an explicit mishnah which says Rabbi Yehuda Meir b'ner Chanukah patur? We'll have this later on in a Koneh Sul Nazir. Rabbi Yehuda says that if someone has a Ner Chanukah outside and then something catches fire from that Ner Chanukah, the person who put the Ner Chanukah outside is patur. Why? Because he has permission to put it out there. So it sounds like here that Rabbi Yehuda associates permission with being patur. My love, Mishum Rishut Beitin, because Beitin gave them Rishut to put your, right, Chanukiyot outside. Because of that, you are patur. So that would say that Rabbi Yehuda associates Rishut with patur. It says, no, Mishum Rishut the mitzvah. No. The reason Ner Chanukah is patur is because that is not only is it Rishut Beitin, but there's a mitzvah involved. That's a higher form of rishut, a higher form of permission to put something in rishut rabim when it's involving a mitzvah, that we say you will not be held culpable for. But in a normal course where you do have permission to put something there, but it's not a mitzvah, like this valim, then you would be held accountable according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'ner Chanukah patur, mipnei shehu rishut mitzvah. So the Brayta says explicitly the rishut that we're talking about here is rishut of mitzvah. So Tashma, another proof that Rabbi Yehuda says that it is patur. It's called Elu Shamru Mutarim LeKalkel B'Shut Rabim Im Eziko Chayavim LaShalim. Supposed to that if you have permission to put things into the Rishut, if you have permission to put things into Rishut Rabim, that's called Rishut Rabim. Nevertheless, if somebody gets damaged, right, you're Chayav. And Rabbi Yehuda says explicitly, Rabbi Yehuda Poter. Rabbi Yehuda says you are patur in that instance. So Rabbi Yehuda disassociates again the permission. God bless you. Permission to put something into Rishut Rabim from, he associates the two, as opposed to the Tanakam, who disassociates them, says that if one puts something into Rishut Rabim, even for Rishut, he's still culpable for it. But the Rishut says, no, if you have permission, that means you are Fatur. The two should be associated.
Isn't that kind of scary, that
Why should it could have just said Rishut, right?
Sure.
Well, that's why it's a Brayta. The Mishnah only says Rishut. That's exactly right. The Mishnah in the Koneh only says Rishut. The Brayta says Rishut Mitzvah. So the Gemara tried to bring a proof from that Brayta that he means Rishut Mitzvah. And now we see that it's not the case. The case is Rishut means Rishut Beis Din.
That's
not exactly. It's not authoritative in that distance, right? So now, Avraham of Nachman. So now, going back to our Mishnah, we said before that Yehuda cannot be the author of our Mishnah. Right, because our Mishnah says that even though you have permission to do something in Rishut Rabim, nevertheless, right, you are patur. So, no. Rabbi Nachman says that's not the case. Rabbi Nachman says in Shalom B'Shat Tutzat Zevalim. Exactly. Our Mishnah is the case when it's not the normal time to put Zevel into Rishut Rabim. Rabbi Yehuda. And it's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is actually, not is it, only is it not Rabbi Yehuda the author of Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Mishnah. Why? Because the Mishnah says you are chayav for the Nezek. So when would Rabbi Yehuda say you're chayav for the nezek when you don't have permission to put something into Rishut Rabim? And that's exactly the case in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is the case where you do not have permission to put it out. Rav Ashi says no. The difference here is because it's tivno v'kashotnan. Right? In our Mishnah, right? The reason that you're chayav in our Mishnah, maybe even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is because tevin and kash are different. Mishom dimisarke, because they scratch. But really they slip. They're very slippery. They get wet. They're slippery. They cause problems. So as opposed to regular zevel, that's a Rishut Rabim, regular zevel is not slippery. Right? It's mushy. It has traction in it. You're able to walk on it without really changing the dynamic of Rishut Rabim. In that instance, Rabbi says you are patur when you have permission to put it there. And then when you put your tevin and kash out into the Rishut Rabim, that's something that alters the dynamic of Rishut Rabim. In that case, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that you are chayav because you've made it more slippery. You've really done something to the detriment of Rishut Rabim. So when we say permission to keep the Rishut Rabim the way it is, but just add to the standard of the Rishut Rabim or the quality of the Rishut Rabim that exists right now. And now, the Gemara says, Kol HaKodim Zakha, right, whoever comes first to take them, right, he gets to take it. And that was Shaul was bothered this. What does that mean? How could it be that somebody can come and take it? If you're responsible for the damage, what does that mean? That you're mafkir? There's a machlokas over here. I'm a rab. Ben bekufan, ben bishvachan. So why did you put the object into the shuter abim? To improve its quality. When you put the dung and you put the other items into the shuter abim so that when they're trampled on, it'll actually make them qualitatively better. So Rab says that when you go and put the stuff in the shuter abim and make it qualitatively better, that when someone wants to come and take it, they can take the actual item that you put out there, plus the improvement that was caused by the shuter abim. When you say kolakolim zakha, means you can come and take everything. Uziri amar bishvachan. The only thing you're entitled to take is the improvement that is placed for the Shutter Rabim, about Loba Gufan. But the Karen, the object that he puts out there, that you're not entitled to take. Why? Because, again, right, as Shul was asking, this belongs to this individual. This individual is not Maskir. He intends to take this dung back afterwards. This is for his own usage. So when he places it out there, he still owns it, and he still wants it. But so, you're Chayav. He's Chayav because he has the permission to put it out there. But not anybody can come and take what they want. Now, why? But my communicate, what is their machlokas here? Rav Zavar Kanso Kufan Mishum Shvachan. Rav says that they were konates, they find the individual, right, because of the Shevach, because of the improvement that was made in Rishut Rabim, which the person is entitled to, they find him and said you can take everything. Because he was Mekalkel Rishut Rabim, we say take everything. Uziri Zavar Kanso Kufan Mishum Shvachan. They didn't extend it. Meaning that when you were violated the Shevach, when you were allowed to take the Shevach, that's what you're allowed to take. The Karen that belongs to this individual is still his property, even though he's responsible or culpable for it. Nevertheless, you're not entitled to take it. There's no knas for him to take it. So it's none. Our Mishnah. Hopek at the glaub shuter abim, buzak behen akher chayav. Benitzko. The last line in our Mishnah is if someone is flipping over dung in a shuter abim and someone trips over it, then they are chayav for that damage. What is missing from that part of the Mishnah? As opposed to the first half of the Mishnah, the first half of the Mishnah says, kol ha-kodim zakah behen. Whoever comes along and takes them gets it first. The latter half, or the second half of our Mishnah, does not have that statement appended to it or associated with it. Which means what? That it sounds like, in the case of Glau, you throw it out, that you're not kol ha-kodim zakah behen. So Mar says, right ahead, be'ilu kol ha-kodim zakah lo k'tani. That's missing from the Mishnah. So Tana the Reisha was in the Seifa. The Mar says, no. The beginning of the Mishnah already mentioned this principle, that kol ha-kodim zakah behen, and that was application even to the Seifa. Va'tani.
Just to clarify the case of Hofei Chesna Golo,
okay.
I thought it was some guy who finds a Golo in the Shabbat, that he wasn't Moti there.
Right.
And turns it over.
Right, it is. That's the way we learned it yesterday. Right, that someone came and took it and the Shabbat was flipping over in the Shabbat Rabim. Right. Right here, the case sounds like either that, either from the Gemara, it really sounds like he actually took it out. This is the individual who's Hofei Chalav, the Shabbat Rabim, and someone who threw it out there, and then he comes and mixes it around, so people will trample it, and, you know, I mean, part of the trampling process is to turn it over and make sure it gets trampled again and again and again. So it's the individual who goes. Now, all the Gemara said yesterday was that when it was over the glove and shoot the rim, it's the one who's responsible, comes responsible. So if it's another person who comes in and flicks the glove, then he'll become responsible. Rabbi Yehuda says he has to be mitzkaving, to be my remedy, he has to make a kinyan on it to be. But either way, that question really is a question of who is responsible for the glove. How the glove gets out there is that somebody took private property, threw it out into the Shutter Abim, now it's being trampled in the Shutter Abim. Now you want to talk about who's responsible for it, that has to do with, again, who's hoping this now. If someone's flipping this dung over the Shutter Abim, it's the original owner, then he's still responsible for it. If it's somebody new, there's a possibility that now this new person is going to become responsible or culpable for it. So that how it gets there or when it's being flipped over is just a question about who's responsible. But either case, someone is responsible for the damage that's being done. Right. Okay, so it's Rabbi Elazar, it's Rabbi Elazar yesterday who said that you have to lift it up over three, you have to take Magbiyah. But there is, like the Tanakh, like you both are suggesting, that it is. If someone went in, it's Hopek Lab, which is Rabbi, and now he's responsible for it, right? Now the question is, where is that in the Mishnah? Why is that missing from the Mishnah? You're Makato, which is the Rabbi, why is that missing from the Mishnah? The Gemara says, no, it's what's in the Seifa, includes everything in the Seifa. Now the Gemara says, Baha Tani Allah, then we learn on our Mishnah, Asuri Mishum Gezel. That is Ulster Mishum Gezel. Well, that sounds like, wait a minute. You can't, if you are Ulster Mishum Gezel, it means that you can't take it. That's how they claim that I called the Kodim Zakhaman. When it says, Kika Tani Asur Mishum Gezel, Akulamas Nisim Kai. When it says Asur Mishum Gezel, that's a reference to the entire Mishnah, not just the safe of the Mishnah. Also, Shikadam Zakhah. For the one who went and took it, with permission, meaning that he's entitled to take it, if you go and take it back from him, that is Gezel. Meaning that he's so entitled to take this, that when he takes it, it becomes his property. And then it will be Gezel to take it away from him. Where it says, Well, we have an explicit mission that says otherwise, which is, it's none. Amosi tibno v'kashod u'shuter avim l'zvalim, v'uzak bahen acher chayav v'nizko. V'chol ha-kodem v'em zakha, Anybody who is first to get it is zocheh. Umutar mishum gezel. Alright, now, how are you going to explain mutar mishum gezel? Mutar mishum gezel is because kol kotem zachah behem. Whoever comes to take them is entitled to take them, therefore it's mutar mishum gezel. So you see that the gezel is not referencing the person who took them already, but rather, right, that permission to take that, which is avnu shuter rabim. But ofeich et haklal shuter rabim, and someone again, here it's ofeich haklal lim shuter rabim. You see that? It's putting out the klal into the Rishut Rabim, as opposed to Ofech et Aglau Bi Rishut Rabim, which is in our Mishnah, right here, it's Li Rishut Rabim, he throws it out into the Rishut Rabim. Huzak Vayen Acher, Chayav, someone has been damaged, you are Chayav, V'yatsur Mishum Gezel, and that is also Mishum Gezel. So it's clear over here that the also Mishum Gezel is referencing the second half of the Mishnah, number one. Number two, right, it shows you that we do not say Kol HaKodim Zachabahen in the second half of the Mishnah. Samar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Glau karamit? What are you talking about glau? Glau is a question. Davar sheyesh bo shevach kanso gufo mishum shvacho. Davar sheyesh bo shevach lo kanso. The difference between the ratio and the tape of the Mishnah is what the Rishut Rabim does for this item. That when you're talking about tevin and kash, when you take out the raw items of, you know, straw and stalks and you put them in the Rishut Rabim, the trampling of the Rishut Rabim transforms these items which are quasi-worthless into zebel. So therefore, the Rishut Rabim itself is improving the quality of the item that's out there. When you're improving the quality of the item, then you can talk about the Rav Knas, which is, if the Rishut Rabim improved the quality of the item, Rekonis, the goof, atu Hasheva, that you can take, because you're improving something Rishut Rabim, Rekonis, that you lose the entire ownership of the property. By Galal, at least this is the assumption of Rashi, by Galal, right, that Galal is quality before it gets out there. Glau is good when it gets out there. When it's trampled, it's the same thing afterwards, meaning that it really doesn't create an additional shevach of placing it into the Rishut Rabim. It's just to get it out of your way, right? To make it that it's not sitting in the way, but you place it in the Rishut Rabim. And because of that, there is no improvement. Rishut Rabim is not creating improvement. Then you can't say, kansu, that there's a knas of goof atu shevach. You have to have some shevach to have a knas of goof. So that's what's missing in the second half of the mission. The second half of the mission, why you're not allowed to take it, and why it's Esther Mishum Gezel, is because there is no Knas here. Because there is no Shevach, there is no Knas on the goof. Mar says, Ibailu, now once we've established this principle, the Divya Omer Kansok Gufan Mishum Shvachan, which is Rav, La Alter Kansinan, Olechi Maiti Shivcha is Kansinan. Is it, like say you throw the straw, and it stalks out there, from that moment, automatically, we can go and take it, you can be zoken it, even though no Shevach has taken place yet. Can you take it immediately? Or do we have to wait until some Shevach is created by the Rishut Rabim? Then that's what's entitled to. That's what triggers the Knas. Tashma. Gemara says, Mikikayarina and Galal. Right? So the Gemara says, because, right, that we asked the question from Galal, right, that would indicate to us, right, that you can, what? You can take it right away. But the fact that the Gemara was willing to ask the question from Galal suggests that right away, immediately, you could take it. And the only reason we didn't take it is because, what? It didn't, Glau doesn't get to any point of Shevach. But Tisbara, right, he says that makes sense. Gerin and Glau, Mikame, the question that we asked on Glau was Mikame to Lishnei Rav Nachman. So that's before we knew the principle of Rav Nachman. Before we knew the principle of Nachman, that's why we asked from Glau. Not after we knew the principle of Rav Nachman. Once we knew the principle of Nachman, but the Shoni Rav Nachman, Mikalamir may Glau, Glau. There is no question from Glau. Once we know the principle of Rav Nachman, then we can't ask. And therefore, you can't draw a parallel between Glau and Tevin and Kash. So therefore, we don't know anything. Glau can't indicate to us anything about Tevin and Kash. So Mar says, Lema Ketanai. Let's say this Machlokas is a Machlokas Tanai. Why? Shtar Shukatu Bo Ribit. You have a shtar, a document that, right, is documenting a loan, but it's a loan that has interest embedded in it. Now, a loan with interest is Asur Min HaTorah. So you have a loan with interest in it. Consino to veino gova loet a keren veloet a ribit. Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that this, we make a knas, we fine him, and we invalidate the contract, we invalidate this document of evidence that there was a loan, and say that he may not only collect the ribit, he may not connect the keren. He can't even collect the principal. I mean that he no longer has a shtar to indicate that he has loaned this money. He can get his keren back, he can get his principal back. There was nothing wrong with the loan that he made with regard to the principal. It was the interest that's problematic, so he can repay, can force the individual, the debtor, to pay the keren, the principal back, but he won't make him pay the interest back. So You might say, Lema Rav Ki Amar Ki Rabbi Meir. Let's say Rav holds like Rabbi Meir that we're koneis. The principle, because of the additional item that you did, right? But Ziri Damar Ki Rabbanan. Ziri will say, like the Rabbanan who say, we are not koneis. The goof, also the Shevach, the Karen, also the Rebis. So Amar Lecha Rav, An Amri, Afilu Rabbanan. Rav says, no, I can even hold like the Rabbanan. I can look at me Rabbanan, also I look Karen, Dibbehit Teira. That over there, the reason the Rabbanan say by lending that it is permissible to lend the principal. The only thing that he did wrong was lend with ribis, with the interest. And therefore, the Chachamim say that he's entitled to get the principal back, and he's not entitled to get the ribis back. Of Al-Hacha, Karen Gufo, Kamazik. Over here, that which you have permission for the Sharabim, it's not only the Sheva that's doing the damage, it's the actual principal which causes the damage that's out there. It's the Karen and the Kash that's out there that causes the damage. So everything, the Karen and the Shevach together, are what are problematic out there. And therefore, maybe the Rabbanan would even agree to me here that you can, we're konate the Karen up to the Shevach. The Ziri Amardacha Anam Reya to go to Rabbi Meir. Ziri says, I can say even like Rabbi Meir. I can look on Rabbi Meir, Hatta Melam Shat Tiva. The reason Rabbi Meir says over there is only from the time of writing. The Avad Le Shuma. Because at the moment that he wrote the document, the interest is embedded in it. So since at the moment that you write the document, the interest and the principal are there, that means that the Isur is present. Right then and there, the Isur is present. Over here, who says that that which you put out in Rishut Rabim will do damage? It's not certain that which you put in Rishut Rabim will do damage, it's only a maybe. So Rabbi Meir, in the case by the principal, says, by the principal and the interest, says the principal goes away too. Why? Because at the moment you lent it, we know you're doing an Isur. Because it's interest along with the loan. From that moment, right away, it's an Isur. Over here, when you put yourself in Rav Shevet Avim, there's no, it's not definitive that you will do damage. It's only if it does damage will you be held culpable. So there, maybe even Rabbi Meir agrees to me that we will not be koneis the Karen up to the Sheva.
Which answers Mr. Grand's question, which is, why is the concept of Mizikin universal? Because the fact is, it's not, it's not a certainty.
I think that's true in Nezikin. Nezikin happen. That's why we have parshot in Nezikin. Even not intentionally. Nezikin happen because that is by having more than one person and having multiple people and multiple interactions and parties, there are things, unfortunately, that do happen, right? Whether it's by accident or whether it's intentional. But here, again, people who take extraordinary measures to make sure that it never happens, those are considered the chassidim. I mean, that's the equivalent of being a defensive driver. Right? People drive. Unfortunately, accidents happen when people drive. Right? But if someone really wants to prevent accidents, they're a defensive driver. So they go out of their way to ensure that no accident should ever happen. So that's a midas chassidus. And that person drives with extra care so that they never get into such an altercation. But otherwise, when people drive normally, we're not saying that they're getting into accidents because they are driving in a manner that is inappropriate. But even when they normally course, sometimes there's judgments and there are things that happen that make it, that damage happen. Right, the Marz says, "Blame like a hadith tonight." That suggests that Machlokes in Rabbi Zeri is actually another Machlokes Tanaim. A motzi tivno because show the shoot the Rabbim l'zvalim v'zukak v'uzak by an acher chayav niskov. Kol hakodem by an zacha v'asurim mishum gezel. Again, this is what we saw before. In our mishnah, you put out Kevin and Kash to shoot the Rabbim, even though possibly it's with permission, maybe it's not with permission, as if it's Rabbi Yehuda. You put it out there, and people get damaged by it. You're chayav. Anybody who comes and takes it is entitled to take it, since you put a damaging item in through Shuddar Abim. And Asurim Mishum Gezel. Right now there's Asurim Mishum Gezel, which is an interesting thing here. Even though we're saying Akodo Kodo the Gzach, and we're still saying Asurim Mishum Gezel. Shimonle Omer Kol Makaslim Shuddar Abim and Chazikan, Hiziko. Right? Anybody who puts something that's damaging or messes up through Shuddar Abim and does damage. Chayavim Lashalem, Pachol Kodo Men Zachaben. Anybody takes them and Zuchen them. Umutori Mishum Gezel. Right there, Mutar Mishum Gezel. So here we have machlokes between Rav Shmuel and the Tanakhama about whether it's Osu Mishum Gezel or Mutar Mishum Gezel. Smart says, well, wait a minute, Hagu Pukasha. Right, you have an internal theory here. Amar, the Tanakhama says, Kol HaKodem Zacha, Vahad Amar, Osu Mishum Gezel. How can you entitle anybody to come and take whatever's there and then say it's Osu Mishum Gezel? Doesn't make any sense. Evalov Achika Amar. This is what he's saying. Kol HaKodem Zacha Bishim Chan. What are you entitled to take? You're entitled to take the Shevach. Asur Mishum Gezel a Gufan, as in with the core, the Karen that you put out there. V'ata Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the main man Rabbi Shimon comes to argue and says, no, afilu Gufan nami kol kodem zachaben, that anything, even in the Guf, like Rav, Ziri vadai tanaim. Of course, in Ziri, there's no way to explain this brisa except to say that it is a machlokas tanaim, and Ziri will hold like the Tanakam. On the other hand, Rav, milema tanaim. Does Rav really have to say that it's a machlokas tanaim? Why? Everybody agrees that there's a knas for the keren or the gul up to the shevach that's created. Here we have to do it. What is the halacha that we pass in? Right, many times there is a halacha that's true, but we don't publicly, right? We don't publicly make it known that this such is the halacha. It is only if someone comes to us and asks us a question, we'll tell them that. We don't go out and announce that such is the halacha. Didmar, Ravuna, Marav, halacha bein morim kein. When it comes to gufan atu shevach, Ravuna says that that is the halacha, but we don't go and publicly announce that such is the halacha. If someone comes and asks us, or we have a case, then we'll pass in that way. Rav Acha bar Adar amar halacha umorim kein. That is halacha, and we go out and we pass in that way. Rav says, "Ini, is that really true?" V'amar Ravuna after chushle, right? That a person who is mafkir chushle, Rashi says, are orim klupim. These are peeled, shelled, right, barley that he put out in the Rishut HaRabim to dry out. And he was mafkir them. And Rav Huna was paskin in that case, right? Anybody who does that, kol kodem zakabahem. They can come and say, see, principle. That means Rav Huna is preempting. He's paskining halacha before any damage was done. He's being moreh to the public that they can come and take it. Rav Ada Bava Afgayer Slikusta. Rav Acha was also some sort of psolet. Actually called it as tupa, because what it is, it's either psolet, the leftovers from date beer, that the stuff that was left over, or the shmarim of date beer that they used to eat. They put it out. It's like some sort of solid item that they put out into the Rishut HaRabim. And again, Rav Ada Bava Paskin, that once you put out the Rishut HaRabim, people were entitled to take it. So now, Rav Ada Bishlam Rav Ada Bava Kishmatek. Rav Ada Bava is the Shitato, who says that we are passing that way. Marine came. So of course he went out and announced that it's after. Aval Rav Yehuda, right? What's with Ravuna? Ravuna said we don't pass in that way. If somebody's damaged, then we say that it's halacha. But we don't go out in public and announce that it's hefker. Ravuna lema adarbe. Let us say that it what? Let us say that he was kosher from his position. The Gemara says no. Hanu mutarim havu. Now over there, in this case over there, alright, it's really not mutarin like mutar, but mutrin hayu, which means that they warned him from the word hatra'ah. This person had gotten multiple warnings to remove his stuff from the Rishut HaRabim, and since they did not listen, right, since he didn't pay heed, he didn't heed these warnings, then he was masquerading as a punishment that he wasn't heeding the warnings of the Beis Din. But in a normal course of events, we wouldn't say automatically that it's hefker, right? We would say that only if something happened or someone took it, that we'd say, okay, yes, you own it now. But generally, we wouldn't go out and say, go take it. But in an instance where a person does not heed the call of basin to remove it, then we say that he's masquerade because he didn't listen to the basin. Okay, what's that here? Mm-hmm.